when no violin is playing, no bird is singing. And this is when life is busy, boring, or hard. Real life doesn't demand that life is always easy or exciting. And loves as much in the dark of night as it does in the warmth of the sun. Real love loves when love isn't much fun and isn't very fulfilling. Real love doesn't quit when things are hard and doesn't check out in the face of disappointment. Okay, so there's no such thing as real love that doesn't require real, willing, and daily sacrifices. There's no way to escape it. And it's costly. Real love calls each of us to be willing to suffer. It calls us to sacrifice of our time, energy, and money. It calls us to be willing at times to be silent, and at other times to have the courage to speak. It calls us at times to refuse to fight, and at other times to fight for what is right. It calls us at times to act decisively, and at other times to be willing to wait. Calls us to lead the way, and at other times to be willing to follow. It calls us to follow a plan, and at other times to be willing to give up our plan. The bottom line, that love doesn't run in the face of sacrifice. Okay? That was number 19. Number 20, let me just continue going through these. Love is being unwilling to make any personal decision or choice that would harm your marriage, hurt your husband or wife, or weaken the bond of trust between you. And this is just getting at that love means giving up your autonomy. Right? It means no longer living your life as if your life belongs solely to you. It's no longer treating your life as an investment that you can individually make. It's approaching every desire, every choice, every decision, every word, every action in the context of what is best for your husband or wife and best for your relationship with them. Okay? Right? We've said at the very beginning, once you get married, we no longer live our lives as single people, right? We live the rest of our lives and all of our lives, every aspect of our lives, as married people. And so love is surrendering my independence for the greater calling and greater joy of union and communion with you, my spouse. Love is refusing to view myself as being separate from you. Love is understanding that now that we are together in this lifelong relationship, everything I do is an active relationship, whether constructive or destructive. Love is understanding that in marriage it is impossible to act independently, right? Because in some way, all of my choices, all my decisions, all my actions will affect you. And so love means living relationally, right? Always choosing and acting with that relationship in view. It means never choosing what would seem to be good for you, but would harm the relationship in some way. It means never indulging an emotion or desire that would end up hurting your spouse. And it means never making a choice or acting in a way that would weaken the trust that is so important to your marriage. Okay, and then number 21, love is refusing to be self-focused or demanding, but instead looking for specific ways to serve, support, and encourage, even when you are busy or tired. One of the things that harms marriage is entitlement. Sinners have great skill at turning blessings into needs. It's very easy for us to load into our own personal need category things that are not needs. We talked about this a little bit with the love languages. And because we have to be expected and demanding. So here's how it works. If I'm convinced that something is a need and you say you love me, it seems right to expect that you'll meet this need. It seems right then to watch to see if you are committed to meeting it and to be demanding if you haven't. Because after all, it's a need. So calling something a need that is not actually a need is one of the ways we tend to excuse self-focus and the demands that accompany it. And of course, we talked about the biblical model of love provides rescue from this temptation. We'll learn later in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6, that Jesus reminds us that we have a Heavenly Father who knows precisely what we actually need. And he's never confused by the question of what constitutes a need and what doesn't. And he has promised that he will supply for us everything we need. Okay? So we must look to him. And of course, the greatest need that we needed was our own sin to be atoned for. And God has met that greatest need at the greatest cost of his own son. Right? Romans 8:32, he did not even spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. How will he not also with him grant us everything? So if God went to that extent of sacrificing his own son, so that we might have relationship and be reconciled to him, would it make any sense whatsoever for him to abandon us after we do? Right? Paul says, no, absolutely not. So you don't have to live fretfully, making sure that all your needs are met. You can humbly admit you're often confused about what your real needs are, And you can rest assured that your true needs will be met by our loving Heavenly Father. And because you're loved in this way, you're free to take your eyes off yourself and to love your spouse. And you don't have to look over your shoulder to see if God is still there, still active. You don't have to worry in your heart. You can know for sure that if He gave you His Son, there's no way He will abandon you in a time of need. And now, before I move to that last point, any comments or questions about this lesson as a whole before I wrap it up? Anything maybe you jotted down from the last one? Okay, I'm just going to read number 22 then. Love is daily admitting to yourself, your spouse, and God that you are not able to love this way without God's protecting, providing, forgiving, rescuing, and delivering grace. So after hearing this lesson on love and marriage, there are two things you should be left with. First, you should be confronted with the fact that love is fundamentally deeper and more active than some warm romantic feeling of affection towards someone to whom you are attracted. It is not some generalized response of happiness when you are with this particular person. No, love is a specific commitment of the heart to a specific person that causes you to give yourself to a specific lifestyle of care. It requires you to be willing to make sacrifices that have that person's good in view. All right, so love is never general, and it never remains in the realm of feelings. Right? It has love in action. It thinks, chooses, loves, decides, acts, and speaks in an ongoing day-by-day commitment to the welfare of another. Right? Real love is concrete, specific, and active. But there's an even more powerful reality that should hit you after this lesson, and this realization should give you pause and then spur you to action. It is impossible for any of us to love as has been described in this lesson. Right? The bar is simply set too high. And the requirements are too great, and none of us has what it takes to reach that standard. This description of love in action has left me personally humbled and grieved at my own shortcomings and failures, with my tendency to name as love things that are not love. And I hope it's helped all of us to admit how self-focused and self-absorbed we actually are, and reminded us that when it comes to love, we're not experts. I certainly am not an expert. No, I am poor, weak, and needy, but I'm not alone in this, and because of this, the realization of failure should not defeat or paralyze you or me. What it should do is drive us to seek help. Now again, by that, I'm not talking about taking a good marriage class, which is helpful, or reading a good marriage book, or getting good marriage counseling. Because all of these can do is describe what is best, right? That's what we do in this class. We're describing what is best. We're giving you the information. But in itself, these don't have the power to help you to desire and do what is best. They can inform you as to what biblical marriage is, as to what real love is, but they can never transform you into a person who loves. But of course, that's what we all need, right? So God's call to love confronts us with our weakness and inability, makes us face how cold and fickle our hearts are, and then being faced with that weakness is one of God's goals in marriage, actually. This comprehensive lifelong relationship is a tool in the hands of God to expose our delusions of wisdom, self-righteousness, and strength, and then to mobilize us to seek help by His grace. And there is help, wonderful and sufficient help for all who seek it. And so we have to turn again and again to the gospel of Jesus Christ, where Jesus shed His blood for the conversation that started out right but has now become angry and tense. Jesus died for the daily pressure of living with someone who is very different from you. Jesus died so that you could win your struggle with forgiveness and be able to resist the seductive call of bitterness and vengeance. He died so that you would have what it takes to make the decision to get out of bed and do what you promised, even though you're weary and discouraged. He suffered so that you would face hurt and mistreatment with wisdom and grace. He died so that you would resist the temptation to give in, give up, run away, or quit. He shed His blood so that you'd have the power to edit your words and say what is wholesome, even when you have been spoken to in ways that are unkind. He shed His blood so that in specific moments you'd have the power to say no to irritation and impatience and respond in kindness and self-control. He died so that in the face of the death of your own dreams, you would take up the better dreams of what He's called you to do. He suffered so that you'd have the wisdom you need to deal with things you didn't expect and don't fully understand. In other words, Jesus shed His blood so that we'd have not only forgiveness, but the power and to grow and to change. And so we must look to him again. This lesson concludes with these words from Paul Tripp. I really love this. He says, Jesus suffered in love so that in your struggle to love, you would never, ever be alone. So don't let regret paralyze you. Don't be overwhelmed by love's call. Don't be discouraged by the size or number of things you're facing. Don't let the failures of the past rob you of hope for the future. No, left to yourself, you don't have what it takes, but he is with you, in you, and for you. Walk forward in hope and courage and commit yourself to real, active, and specific cruciform love that's love shaped by Christ's cross, knowing that his grace really does have the power to make you ready, willing, and waiting. Okay? Anything, questions or comments about that lesson before we move on to the next one? Okay.